For thousands of years, humans built cities for people who walked. The size of buildings, spacing of destinations, and distances individuals would travel on a routine day were scaled for a society where nearly everyone traveled by foot. Today, in North America, we build cities around a more modern transportation technology, the automobile. If you query Americans about the transition, nearly all would talk about it in terms of progress. Humans of the past used to walk everywhere, and so they built settlements around people who walked. Today, we drive everywhere, and so we build our cities around people who drive. Get beyond whether the changes have been positive or not. There is one important aspect of this shift that is critical to acknowledge. It was abrupt. Humans had been living one way for thousands of years, yet within just a couple of decades, Americans transformed an entire continent around a new set of ideas. Those ideas were not the byproduct of thousands of years of trial and error experimentation. They did not evolve into being. They originated largely from the writings of a handful of European intellectuals, notions their cultures largely rejected, but Americans, with lots of room, boundless optimism, and no ancient moorings, readily adopted. In the context of human history, the North American development pattern is the largest human experiment ever attempted. In the blink of an evolutionary eye, we have transformed everything about how we live, get around, interact with each other, make decisions, conduct commerce, fall in love, and countless other aspects of human existence. There is no going back, but there is one useful wisdom we can gain from an understanding of the past. We are compelled today to acknowledge that the wisdom contained in the cities our ancient ancestors built, in the patterns and approaches they developed over thousands of years, exceeds our capacity to fully understand. There are deeper truths there than we will ever know, spooky wisdom that has evolved, along with humanity itself, to serve our needs, known and unknown, in ways we have been far too eager to casually dismiss. From the opening of Strong Towns, a bottom-up revolution to rebuild American prosperity. Human cities, whatever size they started at and whatever size they may grow to be, are places of long evolutionary development, writes our author, as we just heard. The streets, the buildings, the societies they fostered and helped create were developed in human scale. For cities over millennia had to encourage us humans to prosper in the good times and survive through the bad times. As human entities, they evolved, developed, and found a way to achieve both goals by being human in scale and resilient. Goals that, our author notes, were imported to this continent when the early settlers from the Old World brought their millennially long experiences with them. And for all anyone in the horse and buggy ages knew not that long ago, as he points out, they would continue to gain in size and wealth in the same human-scaled manner that cities had always developed. But then, as he tells us, came World War II, the post-World War II years. As we are still learning, those were years that will revolve and resound down the hall of history and human endeavor for many, many decades. To what cities have succeeded so well in doing for millennia, helping us slowly build our wealth and our families through days of want and days of prosperity. After World War II, all cities seemed to know was prosperity. But then, radical change, the post-World War II burst of movement, that eruption of the automobile culture that for the first time in known American history has allowed enabled humans to live far from each other, radically changed our urban infrastructure and architecture. No longer do we build our cities on a human walkable scale. We now build them, as our author notes, on an automobility scale, with the predisposition that prosperity was the rule and will be the rule rather than the exception. Does this augur well or ill for the future? That is the question explored with today's book. It will depend, says our author, on whether we focus on developing our cities from here forward, from the bottom up, or with a hurly-burly manner that all but abandons the very humanness that makes successful cities so successful. As the blurb urging us to read this book tells us, with surprising honesty. Let's explore why our cities are on the cusp of a long, slow decline, and how to approach the challenge in a rational way. Why inducing growth and development has been the conventional response to urban financial struggles, and why inducing growth and development just doesn't work. Why old and blighted areas are often more financially productive than shiny new ones. The surprising ways that strong neighborhoods make us better people. The power of little bets to strengthen and improve the lives of citizens. And how humble public engagement can create amazing insights. This engaging discussion of cities' successes at helping humans survive, sometimes thrive, and build for their future and best times, hearkening back to the human-centered bottom-up evolution, opens with an anecdote, a format he uses successfully throughout the text. The author's memory of his experiences walking through the ancient city of Pompeii, a city frozen in time when it was encapsulated by Mount Vesuvius at the height of the Roman Empire's many centuries of life. We stroll back in time with our author as he takes us to visit a small, ancient fast food restaurant he finds along a highway that led to the outskirts of the once thriving center city. Maron makes his bottom-up argument as he marvels at the ancient building's apt use of location and human-centered practical layout. A prime example of it was, he points out, one of those millennia-learned ways of living and working that our ancestors tweaked but held close to over time because it worked. The ancient fast food joint we visit featured a layout, a front customer service counter that opened to a back room living area that allowed any couple who lived and worked there to run their day-to-day business, even as they watched their kids who were not yet able to leave home to work. A layout that as well freed up one spouse, at least from time to time, to find work elsewhere in the city while their present spouse watched the business. When times were good, that would allow the family to build up a bit of savings, if they were smart enough to do so, to tie them through the inevitable less prosperous times. Genius, our author tells us, that small, ancient fast food restaurant was an iconic layout that was and has been replicated many times over many, many centuries that were to come. It was a great example of bottom-up, successful urban building. And so it is, as the chapters roll forward, that we focus on the incredible power of the local, of personal initiative, that cities, at their best, favor. It's on the local level, he tells us, with personal initiative and effort, that we build the gradual accumulation of wealth, intellectual, social, economic, that builds a foundation for the larger society's long-run successes and failures, be that wealth part of an ancient city on the coast or a contemporary town in the great American Middle West. Mahon, the longtime editor of a web blog titled, oddly enough, Strong Towns, offers many more recommendations to bring back the resiliency and the growth of individual, writ larger, communal wealth, suggesting, perhaps controversially for some at one point, that cities ought to embrace their established neighborhoods, as the most densely populated built-up neighborhoods are often the most productive as well, and stop chasing ever-widening suburban sprawl, those bright, shiny new objects we referred to earlier, which most often, he says, cost us more to develop and maintain than the often disdained city cores. As an easier-than-not example of how to understand his point, he talks with us about the negative effects of allowing public infrastructure to worsen in any part of that densely developed center city. There is little reason, he writes, for a landowner to put a new roof on their home or even cut the grass regularly if they feel the political and social powers that be have decided their neighborhood is declining into worthlessness. As he goes on to tell us, our cities have no control over much, but the key parts they do. To remove as many distortions as possible, to give neighborhoods a chance to evolve, to build wealth in neighborhoods that is not merely transactional, but reflected in the net worth of the people living there. Cities must allow, by right, the next increment of intensity throughout all neighborhoods. and they must limit, by right, development to only the next increment. The goal is to thicken up neighborhoods, to create feedback loops that allow emergent prosperity to build on itself. No neighborhood can be exempt from change, but no neighborhood should experience radical change all at once. This is the prudent discipline we must impose on ourselves. Complex systems overwhelmed with resources stop behaving in complex ways. They become merely complicated, losing the feedback mechanisms that drive adaptation. The temptation to work only in bold ways, to embrace incessant and comprehensive transformation as a strategy, guarantees eventual atrophy and decline. If our cities are to be truly strong, he writes, they must resist the easy path and dedicate themselves to the work. Cities can and should grow rapidly where that option is available to them. But that growth needs to be one step at a time, not huge leaps in the dark. Controversial as many of the points and ideas he presents are, he ends with, I think, some inspiring, thoughtful words that perhaps all of us can buy into. He writes, "Building a strong town requires that we seek not to be understood, but to understand each other. Not to be served, but to live as servants to those around us. We must receive the wisdom of our ancestors with humility and with the same level of introspection and dedication to sacrifice, undertake the work of passing on a better place to subsequent generations. That is our burden. It's also our path to salvation. Our cities are struggling financially, trapped in a system grinding them in decline. Working together in an international way, it is possible to make our places stronger financially while also improving the lives of people. That is the essence of a strong town's approach, the bottom-up revolution America desperately needs." What a fascinating, interesting book. You're going to disagree with some of it. You're going to say huzzah to much of it, I suspect. Strong Towns, A Bottom-Up Revolution to Rebuild American Prosperity by Charles R. Marone, Jr. It's available at so many of our fine public libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library. Thank you for listening.